Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Night Shifts Black by Alison Santos. Narrated by Veronica Worthington. Day 1. I'd be lying if I said I don't notice him enter the restaurant. We all do. It's impossible not to. He isn't drop-dead gorgeous or anything. In fact, I can't describe a single trait I haven't seen before. He's not particularly tall, nor is he memorably short. His hair is messy in an intentional kind of way that makes you think he cares a little, but not too much. At the very least, he used to care, and old habits die hard. He's dressed similarly, casual but uncomfortably so, like this is his one pair of jeans in a closet full of suits. Although really, his jeans are too expensive to count as jeans anyway. He hasn't shaved in a couple of days, but it suits him, and makes you pretty sure it's an intentional look. No, it isn't any of that. It's the way his eyes scan the cafe, the chairs, the walls, the ceiling. The way what should be a very confident young man cowers in the entrance, the cold air blowing in behind him, interrupting our breakfasts with his personal drama. Stan Hemford even mutter something about moving in or moving out. But I don't worry about Stan. I can only stare at our intruder's clenched fists and the way they mirror his set jaw. He's here, but he doesn't want to be. And then his eyes seem to find what he's looking for. Me. I almost choke on my tea as he begins his approach, and my brain launches a frantic index of the last few years, trying to piece together why I'd have any role in this person's life. Maybe he kind of looks familiar, but I don't think I know him. He isn't the type you'd forget, so I believe myself. In a brief moment of absurdity, I even consider the possibility that this is a real live hit. But he doesn't look like a hitman. At least, not what a girl who spent most of her life in a rural Pennsylvania town imagines a hitman to look like. He looks more like the guy who would hire the hitman. Actually, he looks like the actor who would play the guy who hires the hitman. A hitman? That's my working theory? I swallow.
I'm sorry to bother you.
He begins with an obvious accent, which is actually the first thing about the scene that doesn't surprise me. Nothing about him fits here, at this place, in this moment. It's all so foreign that, for a split second, I feel like I don't fit either. Can I help you with something? You look lost. His eyes change again, filling with a heavy sadness. Fear, maybe. No, terror. I don't move. Everyone is watching us. He shakes his head.
I'm not lost. I was just hoping I could have your chair for a bit.
My chair?
There are many others available.
True. There's one right across from me. I really don't have a good reason not to move, nor can I imagine denying the simple request with him looking at me like that.
Sure, no problem.
I push my saucer across the table and stand with great ceremony. He stares at me in shock, maybe a hint of amusement, as I skirt around him and drop to the other side of the table. This okay? I ask, and when his lips twist into a slight smile, something beautiful happens to his face, but it's gone so quickly I actually feel sad.
You're very literal.
You're the one who interrupted my breakfast. He nods, but doesn't apologize, and I suspect he suddenly forgets about me. He's far away now. I watch his face as he studies the chair, his eyes tracing each detail. The chipped paint, the frayed fabric of the seat. He reaches out and touches it. Tentatively at first, and his fingers caress the back, gliding over the bumps and cracks. I fight my instinct to say something, to interrupt the awkward encounter between this stranger and a piece of cheap diner furniture. The defensive humor slips to my tongue but catches on my lips. Again, it's his eyes. There's something there, something deep, something shattered. I'm not even sure he's here to sit. After a long pause, he bites his lip and backs away.
Thank you.
He mumbles before breaking for the door and disappearing with the same impact with which he arrived. The audience is glued again, and I hear Stan mumble something about punks and hippies. I stare after the stranger as well, maybe even with a little regret that I hadn't been more memorable. While it's clear I'm not part of his life, I'm suddenly afraid this odd event will make him part of mine. My server approaches with an apologetic smile.
Sorry, I should have warned you.
Warned me? I ask, still watching the door as if he'll return and explain the mystery so it doesn't explode into something that will haunt me after I leave.
Yeah, it started on Monday. You haven't been here since. Third day in a row, same time, same table.
What do you mean? What started?
What you just saw.
He comes in and stares at this chair?
She shrugs. Basically, just stands here and looks at it. He touched it today. That was new.
I guess.
What are we going to do, though, right? It's not like he's breaking any laws, just acting weird is all. Can't arrest a guy for being weird. Well, unless he's naked, too. You think I'm kidding, but that happens. At least this one is just weird.
Weird? That word seems dissonant to me. Part of me can't help but wonder about the weird naked guy, but just a small part. The rest is still invested in our current clothed weirdo. No, not a weirdo. The name just doesn't work. I would need a lot of words to describe what I just witnessed in those brief seconds, but weird isn't one I'd choose.
He seemed so sad.
I don't know, maybe. We get all kinds in here. None of my business, as long as he doesn't disturb the guests. Sorry if he bothered you.
He didn't.
You want a refill?
I nod, and instinctively study the vacant chair across from me.
Day 2. I never eat breakfast at Gemma's 2 days in a row, but I knew the second I left yesterday that I'd be back. I'm not a nosy person by nature, but I am an observant one, and I certainly can't ignore things the way a lot of people can. I sense I'm exposing myself to a world I might regret. But judging by the amount of time I've spent reviewing every detail of that strange encounter, I'm pretty sure I'm already stuck in it. So I go back, request the same table, settle into the chair across from the important one this time. I'm grateful I have a different server, Darren, with a Y, so he doesn't recognize what I'm doing because I'm embarrassed for some reason. I don't want anyone to know why I'm here. No one except the stranger, anyway. I need to know why he's sad, why he's afraid, why he's okay being weird when he's clearly not. I need to understand the chair. I was very intentional in my decision to leave his chair open when I sat on the other side. I wonder if he'll notice. I order my tea and pretend to study the menu, but really, I'm watching the door, waiting. It's the wrong angle to view the door from this side, however, so I'm forced to scan the rest of the restaurant with each peek. I notice a few other familiar faces around the room, and can't help but wonder if they're waiting, too. Stan is here, still too close to the entryway, so he'll be cold when the stranger enters and hesitates in the opening. He's a little later today, just a couple minutes, but enough for me to think that he's not some kind of obsessive sociopath who times his fixation on a rigid schedule. This chair routine is part of his day, but it's not the only part of his day. I take some comfort in that, although I'm not sure why. This has nothing to do with me. Like yesterday, the hostess doesn't even ask him if he'd like to be seated. She knows why he's here, and watches with a vigilance that's ready to call for help if necessary. Her hand seems poised to reach for the phone as he does his search. And that's when it occurs to me that he's not searching. He knows where to go. He knows what he will find when he gets there. He's not looking. He's bracing. He starts toward my table again and then stops abruptly. I can't tell whether he's annoyed, upset, or pleasantly surprised to discover my obvious intrusion into his life. He's dressed similarly to yesterday, but different enough that I realize this casual style may be new to him, but it's now permanent. As I study him with the same intensity he studies me, I also notice he's younger than I first thought. He's been aged, but not by time. If I had to guess, I'd say mid to late 20s. I'm terrible at guessing, though, so I decide not to.
"You're big," he says quietly. I still can't interpret his reaction.
"So are you."
I motioned toward the chair. This might be my table, but you can have the chair.
Thank you.
Oddly enough, he doesn't even look at it today. In fact, he sits at the neighboring table as though he's completely abandoned his mission. I'm disappointed, and again startled by my strange reaction. I suck in my breath and grip my teacup. Mind if I join you? I ask, before it actually occurs to me that's weirder than anything he's ever done. I kick myself. He glances at me but doesn't seem nearly as surprised by my question as I am. Then I realize it's only because he's distracted. He doesn't care about my question.
Sure,
he mutters. I suspect it's more out of politeness than a desire to allow me access to his life, and I quickly regret my impulsive request. He doesn't really want me here, that much is obvious, but neither can I back out now in any reasonable way. At this point, I'm committed to picking up my saucer and sliding across the narrow aisle to his table. I'm Callie, by the way.
Luke.
You're not from around here, are you? I cringe. Nice work, Callie. There's that brief smile again, and my embarrassing cliché is momentarily forgiven.
No, I'm not.
Are you the law in these here parts? He teases back. And now I'm officially hooked. Sorry, I know, that was probably the worst thing I could have said.
I can think of worse.
Do you come here often? This time the slight smile becomes a full-on grin.
As often as you, apparently.
He responds. You must think I'm stalking you.
Are you?
A little. Before I can control it, my gaze shoots to the chair, and his smile fades. I wish I could take it back. I wish I'd been strong enough to stop it. But we both know that's why we're here. We both know we're connected for no other reason. Neither of us says a word. I have no way of knowing if his mind is in the same tailspin as mine, but I sense it probably is. I'm sure his head goes to places most of us could never understand. The server approaches and seems surprised to find us together.
Can I get you something?
He asks Luke. I don't miss his quick glance in my direction, but he doesn't let it linger long enough to force me to respond.
Toast, please.
Luke answers.
White wheat or rye?
Rye.
You got it. What about you? Still fine with just tea?
I glance at Luke. I am, but a cup of tea isn't long enough. Actually, I'll take an order of pancakes. Small stack.
Hash browns or fruit cup?
Fruit.
Bacon?
No, thanks.
Sure thing.
He shuffles off to fulfill our orders, and I'm suddenly nervous at the thought of being alone again with Luke. I'm nervous because he's enigmatic and beautiful and sad and debatably weird. Although clearly not as weird as I am, I've learned.
No bacon?
He asks. I'm relieved he's forgiven me for my earlier chair blunder. I wanted you to think I'm healthy.
You care what I think?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure yet. Just covering my bases in case it turns out that I do. I'm rewarded with another smile.
Fair enough. I don't want to know how I rate with my rye toast.
I shrug. I'm reserving judgment until I see what you put on it. This time he actually laughs, and now I'm sure he was someone else once. He would have occupied this whole restaurant wing with his fancy suits and perfect hair, surrounded by a crowd of admiring acquaintances. This is a man who wasn't alone until recently. His magnetic laugh wouldn't have allowed him to be alone. He must not laugh anymore.
That's a lot of pressure for a condiment,
he observes. There has to be a marketing campaign in there somewhere.
Maybe. But what about you? Pancakes come with many possibilities as well.
True. You'll just have to wait and see. He nods, and I fight with my brain to keep the conversation flowing. I know if it stops, he will get lost in himself again and retreat to that place I can't go. I don't know why it's so important to me that I prevent that from happening, but when I see his eyes move to the right, a small ember of panic begins to ignite. I'm losing. Do you live in the city? I ask, drawing him back to earth. He seems to have to shake something before he can respond.
No.
Well, not really. Just visiting? Kind of. What about you?
Yes, I do, but I've only been here a few months. He nods. He's being polite again. Polite does nothing to help me. I need to bring him back to the cafe, this table. You know, Stan's been watching you like a hawk.
Stan?
I motion to the table by the door with my eyes.
Ah, yes. He's the one who needs a jacket.
I think he's amazed you actually stayed this time.
He's not the only one.
Surprised, I go to meet his gaze, but he's not looking at me. That wasn't a flirtatious comment. He's not even referring to me. I might be partially responsible for his shocking delay for toast, but I'm just an excuse. Maybe even a roadblock. I'm still not entirely certain he wants to be here right now. The way he fidgets with his fork and absently bounces his knee, it's like he's already left the cafe, and his body doesn't understand why it can't catch up.
Look, I'm sorry. I'm afraid I'm being rude. I don't mean to be, I'm just...
He doesn't finish. He can't. Not because he's going to cry or anything. He's just not good at this sort of thing anymore. Conversation. I understand and smile to let him off the hook. He seems relieved, and I watch as his grip relaxes on the fork for the first time. We don't have to talk. I'm kind of tired anyway, late night, I explain. He nods and rubs his eyes as if commiserating. I can tell he knows late nights, too.
Thanks. It's not personal.
Oh? I didn't think it was until now. He smiles, but his eyes aren't in it this time. I've definitely lost him. And no, he's counting the seconds until he can finish his toast and escape. He's regretting this, staying, participating in life again. I feel like I've been whacked in the stomach, but I don't blame him. He doesn't owe me anything. This is my fault, not his. I have mercy on him. I look at my phone and force a curse. I'm so sorry. I didn't realize what time it was. I actually have to be at work in 10 minutes. I lie. Don't hate me, but I have to run. Our eyes do meet this time. And for the briefest moment, I think he knows what I'm doing. I don't know how or why I think that, but he almost seems grateful for my sacrifice.
Sure. No problem.
Here. I slap some bills on the table and force the most genuine smile I can. Breakfast is on me. He shakes his head, but it's instinctive.
That's not necessary. It's the least I can do for making you move. Twice,
he adds. Really, I wouldn't feel right forcing you to pay for food I didn't even eat. But it was nice to meet you. Luke. The dramatic pause before his name sounds awkward, but it doesn't seem right to leave him, maybe forever, without making our goodbye personal. He appears to notice my embellished farewell. He almost seems disturbed by the sound of his name, like he's not used to hearing it anymore.
Thanks. You too, Cully.
I grin at his pronunciation. It's not quite right with an A that sounds more like an O, but I like it better the way he says it. Now I don't want to leave. I'm not sure I can, but I have to. I don't belong here, in his world. I get the sense no one does. Day 3. It's another 3 days before I finally go back. I wanted to go the next day, and the next, but I used all the strength I had to let my will overcome my compassion. I wasn't ready to face that chair, whatever it is, whatever he is. This fledgling relationship built on a mutual understanding that there isn't one. It felt like I'd be breaking one of our rules if I went back too early. Like I'd be pushing for a place in his life when he clearly doesn't want me in it. If I waited, though, just a couple days even, then we could blame it on chance. It wouldn't be fair for him to claim my favorite cafe and force me out permanently. He'd understand that and have to respect the fact that I'd reappear eventually. So here I am, day 3. I take the table beside the one with his chair again, the same one where we almost shared breakfast last time. When I see him enter, my pulse quickens. I don't know if it's attraction. Probably. How could it not be? But it's also something else. Fear, maybe. that he won't accept my presence, that he spent the last few days in this spot without me, relieved I've disappeared and left him in peace. My fear dissolves into a rush of something else when he nearly smiles and heads straight for our table. "Yobik," he says, removing his jacket and placing it on the back of the chair. His vintage T-shirt is thin today, and I notice the hint of tattoos peeking through the light-colored sleeves. He's also muscular, more than I would have thought. Not obsessively so, like he spends every waking hour working on his body, but naturally, like he lives a life where it's inevitable. I can't help but wonder what fills his hours when he's not in Gemma's cafe staring at that chair. "The tea here is second to none," he smirks and drops across from me. "If this is going to be a regular thing, you'll have to do more than drink tea. It's a little too obvious." My heart soars. I don't even know why, unless it's because it's the first time he's acknowledged that I've made an impact. "I almost had pancakes last time." "Almost. Just so you know, I didn't stay for the toast either. I'm surprised they let us back in." I smile. "We paid for our wasted food. Did we leave a decent tip?" "Since you emptied your wallet on the table, I think we covered it." "How do you know I emptied my wallet?" I ask. "I watched you do it. You almost threw in a couple receipts, too, until you stuffed those back in." "Yeah, but..." I don't finish. He's observant, like me. I wonder how many other things he's noticed about me. That I'm left-handed? That my hair is darker than what seems natural for my skin tone? That my eyes are too big for my face? But really all my features are, so maybe they work together anyway. I realize there are a lot of things people could observe about me, and consider how one-sided my approach has been to forming my world. "I was in a hurry," I explain.
"Right, because you were late for work."
"I was."
"Yeah?"
I swallow. "Yeah." I look at my phone and wince. If I had been late that day, then I'm really running behind today. "I have staggered hours." He grins and nods.
"Okay."
I return his smile and clear my throat. "Fine, you caught me. I actually make my own hours."
"I see. Then technically you could have been late, if you'd decided you were."
I like his observation, for many reasons.
"Technically."
"Well, that's helpful then. Now I don't have to be offended that you ditched me."
"Ditched you? Please.
I was doing you a favor by leaving, wasn't I?" His smile fades, but this time he doesn't totally retreat to that dark place that makes me regret approaching his wall. This particular withdrawal is more introspective.
"Maybe."
"So what are your hours, then?"
"I guess I make my own hours as well."
"Self-employed?"
"Are you?"
"Yes," I say. He nods. He didn't answer my question. He doesn't intend to answer my question. I wonder if it's the question itself, or a deeper flaw. I doubt he will answer any of my questions, so I decide not to ask any more for now. "I'm a writer," I continue, accepting that if we're going to talk, it will have to be about me. That seems to interest him. And I know I will have to make this topic seem a lot more glamorous than it is. I don't usually worry about other people's opinions, but now I want to impress him for some reason.
"A writer, really? What do you write?"
"Everything I can. A lot of it is to pay the bills, but some is to keep me sane."
"I'm more interested in the path that keeps you sane."
I expected as much, and lean forward. I'm disappointed when the server prevents my response. We place our orders, and the server eyes us with subtle suspicion. I don't blame him, given the fact that we walked out on him the last time we were here together. I wonder again if Luke sat here alone the last 2 days without me. I wonder if he ordered anything. I wonder if he wondered where I was. I doubt it. And the thought makes me sad. "Poetry, mostly."
"Poetry?
The part that keeps me sane?"
"I see. Interesting.
What about you?" I kick myself. No questions. I wait for him to shut down, but this time he doesn't.
"No poetry. Not exactly, anyway."
"Novels?" He smirks.
"No, maybe one day."
"Can you give me a hint? My next guess will be travel brochures."
He smiles. Song lyrics. Suddenly, it hits me. I don't know how I missed this. You're a musician, I guess. He seems disturbed.
Used to be, but yeah.
All of a sudden, I want to look at the chair, but this time I'm able to stop myself. There's no way I'm messing this up.
Used to be.
Used to be. Is music something that ever really goes away? He visibly shrinks. Stupid. I'm furious with myself.
Yes. I wouldn't have thought so, but yes, it can.
We're silent, both letting that thought settle around us, deep into the cracks of our tenuous alliance. Me wondering what it would take to break a musician of his music. Him wondering? I have no idea. At least I understand his hair now, and his clothes, and the fact that he doesn't really fit in here. He never wore suits like I'd originally thought, but he also doesn't wear jeans like the rest of us. I know my head shouldn't go where it does, but the thought blasts through before I can stop it. I wonder if he's a musician I would know. Musician could mean anything, but there's something about him that makes me think he's in a tier I'd recognize. I think back to that strange glimmer of recognition when I first saw him. But I don't ask, for once managing to hold my destructive question inside. The silence continues, although it's not awkward this time. I like that we don't have to talk. I like that simply watching his eyes work the room is enough to replace any need for conversation. I find it fascinating that he's okay with my presence, but doesn't really need me here. Part of me thinks I could be anyone, and he'd be sitting in the same position, tattooed arm resting on the table, fingers absently exploring the napkin, fingers that used to explore a piano or guitar or flute. I want to know which one, and think maybe that's a safe question. What instrument did you play? I ask, breaking the silence. It was safe enough, and he comes back to me.
Guitar, mostly, but we all played everything.
In a band? He nods. I sense that I shouldn't go any further.
Not an American band, though, I tease.
He smiles again.
Actually, yes. Don't let the accent fool you.
So it's just a fake one? My joke startles him, but he likes it.
My accent? No, it's real. It didn't hurt my image as a frontman, either.
Another clue. I'd imagine not. I have yet to meet a girl who is anti-cute musicians with accents.
No, I have.
He returns with a grin.
Really?
I ask, skeptical. I'm going to go out on a limb and guess they were anti-something else. This time the grin spreads into his eyes, and I actually catch my breath for a second.
You're probably right about that.
It's then that I notice it. The ring. My heart stops. I don't know how I missed that as well, and it makes no sense that I'm disappointed. It's not like this is a date or any hope of a date. This isn't even about that. Maybe that's the problem. This is more than that. And the fact that he shares these moments with someone else the other 23 hours of his day hits me harder than it should. But I don't ask. I don't say anything. I actually pretend I don't see the dark band on his left hand, even though I'm captivated by the way it encircles his finger. A finger perfectly refined by years of creating art. The ring is a work of art in itself. Nothing like I've ever seen before. It suits him. A musician's ring. A ring a rock star would wear after marrying the exotic lingerie model most men would kill for. I say nothing, afraid if I do, he'll think I'm suggesting something I'm not. I'm afraid he'll feel guilty, and he hasn't done anything wrong. Our breakfast arrives, and I can almost sense our server's relief that we're still here to receive it this time. He hovers a little longer than necessary, reciting a list of possible additions to our meal no one over the age of 7 should need to review. We assure him we're fine, and he finally backs away, still watching as if expecting us to disappear before he can return with a check. His life will never be the same, I whisper, when he finally accepts that his job of delivering our food is done.
I fear you're right,
Luke responds. Should we apologize for last time?
I don't know, that might freak him out even more.
We don't want that. We'll just have to regain his trust over time. My knife stops cutting. I know I shouldn't, but I look up anyway. He clears his throat. I'm sorry. That was forward.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?